welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. Story comes from the book The Pseudo People, Androids and Science Fiction, edited by William F. Nolan. This is James Causey's The Show Must Go On. Opening night. The stage was starkly medieval, all sawdust and three rings and the glistening tightrope wires. From their cages, beasts snarled and trumpeted. The ringmaster snapped his whip and bowed to the eight giant lenses that stared bleakly down. In back of those lenses was our audience. 60 millions of audience scattered throughout the hemisphere. In the wings, Lisa trembled against me. I whispered, "Your cue." And she nodded, squeezed my hand. The drums rolled. Watching her move on stage, I wanted to cry. She was lovely. It was the way she moved, like a hawk against the wind. The breathless lilt in her voice. The magic I'd taught her. Next to me, Paul Chanin grinned.
Nervous, Midge?
No, I told him. I had never liked Paul. He was too smug, too sleekly handsome. I hadn't liked the way he'd been smiling at Lisa these last few days of rehearsal, or the way she'd smiled back. But Paul was good for a human. He could do a one-arm planche on the high wire. He could cartwheel blindfolded over gleaming coals, and he could sing. We went on stage together. Paul, leaping lithe and splendid in crimson tights, me floundering clumsily after with my baggy pants and wistfully painted clown face, blowing kisses to the blazing arcs above, now weeping in mock fury as Paul made love to Lisa. Then I leaped 30 feet in the air and hung from the tightrope by my toes. A big smile. Midge, the clown. Sometimes you can tell when a show's going over. It was that way now. Right from the beginning, I knew we had them by the throat. The banks of emotional reaction lights above the arcs told the story. They shone a clear, deep ruby, a good, healthy sign of audience empathy. But I wasn't surprised. Our play was a combination of two primitive art forms, and it had everything: love, pathos, beauty, and terror. The finale was best when the Zarl escaped from its cage and almost caught Lisa. I killed the Zarl, singing duo pro Pagliaccio as I died, my voice golden thunder. Curtain. Director Latham hurried on stage, clapping, his eyes wet with tears.
Splendid! Magnificent, Midge. I think we've finally done it.
Well, looks like a hit, sir. Those ancients sure know their stuff. I hope it's not just novelty interest.
We'll know later. Coming to the cast party?
No, I got a very special party planned. Just me and the wife, alone. We'll see you at rehearsal tomorrow. I went backstage to find Lisa. She wasn't in our dressing room. Puzzled, I went down the hall to Paul's dressing room, opened the door. Paul, have you seen... I stared at them, Paul and Lisa.
Oh, hello, darling. Isn't it wonderful? Paul's proposed.
And she's accepted.
Accepted?
It'll be so perfect. The three of us, together.
But we're androids.
So what? You're actors, and that's what really counts. It'll be the best companionate marriage on record.
I remember saying it would be fine. I remember shaking Paul's hand and saying, no, I couldn't go to the cast party. I had a headache. I remember stumbling back to my dressing room and wiping grease paint off and saying to the mirror, "At two, Pagliaccio." I don't remember taking the pneumatic tube home or getting into the inertialess lift to our apartment on the 91st level. Our apartment was nice, 5 rooms with a glass terrace a half mile above the city, and I stood on the terrace looking at the surprise that I planned for Lisa, the food, the crystal sparkling in the firelight, the wine, my little surprise party. I sat down and slowly opened the wine. Why? Paul was human. That was the answer. He could give Lisa that sense of solidity, of belonging. It's been 20 years since emancipation, but humans still think they're doing androids a favor by marrying them, even though androids are saving the race from suicide. It was long after midnight when Lisa came in. She wore a sheer pink evening dress, and her hair was soft gold on her shoulders. Her beauty was a knife twisting in my throat.
Darling, you shouldn't have waited up.
Where's Paul?
Home. We're taking out our companionate policy in the morning. Would you help him move his things?
Yeah, sure.
We'll be so happy, the three of us. Come to bed, darling.
I'm not sleepy. I think I'll go for a walk. I used to love to walk the city at night, staring morbidly at the hate bars, at the blood-red neons advertising violence and sudden death. I used to congratulate myself for not needing the hate bars, for not being a stinking human. This time was different. I stood in the rain, shivering, looking at the sign. Joe's Hate House, knives only. Kill like a man. It exploded in a crimson spatter of fire, now reforming, showing a dagger in a clenched fist. I stared at that dagger a long time. I was thinking about Paul. Finally, I went inside. My first impression was of a great dim grotto lit by smoldering tapers. There was music, a discordant cacophony with drum beats that made your flesh crawl. It was music out of the pit, the kind of music a Zorro would have written in its death throes.
A registration, sir?
He was a fat little man in blue evening tunic who took my name, beneficiary, and 10 credits admission fee.
Spectator or participant, sir?
His smile was jovial, but the little pig eyes were cold dead. Those eyes watched a dozen deaths nightly. It was my job to stop those deaths, to wipe out the hate bars, yet here I was, an actor, ninth class, smiling awkwardly at him, and I told him, "Spectator, please." He bowed, led me to the roped-off spectator booths. I ordered a drink and gazed at the participants with a sick fascination. They sat quietly, faces rigid, staring into the bar mirror. They drank with studied deliberation, eyes darting. A tall man in gray tunic suddenly threw his drink into a startled face. Steel flashed. There was a moan. Gray tunic fell to the sawdust-covered floor, writhing. There were shouts of delight from the spectators as two white-caped bartenders carried the body away. The drums blared.
Not fast enough, eh, Midge?
It was Director Laffin.
Surprised to see me here? For your information, the show was a flop.
That's impossible. The reaction...
Novelty only, son. Sure, it's a beautiful show. They'll watch it for a week, 2 weeks. Then the snake pits again. And we failed.
We had a 60 million audience. That's all the quota council needs. They could enact legislation tomorrow.
And within a week, the crime rate would be triple. A man's life wouldn't be safe in broad daylight. People need emotional catharsis, the sight of blood. It's why hate bars are legal. It's why the council pours 1 million credits a month into our show, hoping to wean the populace, to educate them. But humans don't care. Why should they? Why spend a lifetime learning to write music when an android child can make you weep with a whistled tune? Man built better than himself. Now he's sorry, but it's too late. He needs the androids, the beauty they can give him, and he's ashamed to admit it. Here he meets himself on even terms. Our show needs some of this, Midge.
No, I'll resign first.
Will you? You're not a free agent, mister. The show must go on.
5 little words, quietly spoken, but my head snapped erect. Those 5 words were a trumpet blast, a joyous shout that stiffened the spine, that made you glad to be an actor, proud of your heritage. I told him, damn you.
Midge White, XQ9. X, white Caucasian type. Q, special training from the creche, type superior. 9, actor the very best. You're good, Midge. You got a baritone like an organ. On stage, you're passion and fire and storm. You can tear the heart out of an audience with a smile. You've got reflexes no human ever had, with twice the number of relay modes. Heavier nerve fibers, instantaneous reaction time. You're the penultimate, son. You're theater. And you're letting your audience down. I'm only a director. You're the empathy kid. You know what the audience really needs. Give it to them.
Sure, sure. A few dead androids come curtain time. We can vote now, have you heard? If you prick us, do we not vote?
Save it. So, 20 years ago, you got emancipated. So what? The council still reserves the right to manufacture special androids for emergency. Humanoid types to test new antibiotics. Initial landing crews for unexplored planets. Guinea pigs.
Slaves. Slaves. Class 9s are different. We've got free will.
Really? Stick around. Absorb some atmosphere. We're counting on you, Midge. Good night.
He was gone. I sat drenched in hate, staring after him at the greedy faces around me that taught hungry smiles. The participant section was still as death. Nobody moved. Those figures at the bar sat rigid, hands on their knives, waiting. I stood up. I was trembling. I walked through the bloom towards the crimson railing that ended the spectators' area. There was a soft, collective sigh behind me as I vaulted over the rail. At the bar, no one moved. It was very still, and there was only the crunch of my feet in the sawdust. I carefully chose a seat at the far end of the bar as the bartender came up, smiling.
Oh, suicide, huh, pal? No weapon?
I want some wine. He brought wine. Three stools away, a little man in a brown business tunic turned his head.
On the house. Under the rules, you're allowed one taste before you become fair prey. We don't get many suicides here. Only a month ago...
Beat it. He moved away, hurt. I looked at the wine. The little man on my left moistened his lips and smiled.
Made my first kill last week. Sometimes I wonder how we got along before the hate bars. Once I was headed for a complete crack-up. Failure, business, love, everything. Now I'm a new man. I'm somebody, you know what I mean?
You ever watch the telecast?
Ah, pap. Tinsel propaganda for children and old women.
I picked up my glass. His hand slid along the bar toward his knife. I sipped my wine. The little man's hand blurred. Steel glinted in the torchlight. Any android's neural synapses are fast, and entertainer types are fastest of all. I plucked that knife out of midair and held its thumb and forefinger 2 inches from my throat. There was a soft moan of anticipation from the spectators, and the bartender chuckled.
Oh, very nice. Under house rules, he's yours. Give it to him in the belly.
No! It's not fair. Did you see how he caught it? He's an android.
Are you?
Class XQ9. The crowd stirred and muttered. Hatred coiled in the air like a live thing. I looked at the twisted faces, the snarls. I threw the knife point first into the bar. It quivered.
Get out.
I walked out. I wanted to vomit. I was thinking about Paul. I helped Paul move into our apartment next day. He was very cheerful. Lisa was radiant. After they came back from registration, Paul carried Lisa over the threshold, according to tradition, and winked at me. I went for a walk. That next week, I lived in a kind of quiet madness. They were always together, between rehearsals, after the show, bright heads close together, smiling and holding hands. Lisa was very sweet to me, the perfect companionate wife. It was all very civilized. I don't know when I decided to kill Paul. Maybe it was that afternoon after rehearsal when I heard them talking about me backstage.
Yeah, I spoke to Latham this morning. Now, the council's going to close the show soon.
But it's a wonderful show, Midge says.
Midge's old hat. Latham wanted him to change the script and he refused. The public wants action, sweetheart, not this watered mush we're giving them. I want you to divorce Midge.
Paul!
Well, you don't love him, you never did. Midge belongs in the past with a dinosaur in the opera and video. He can't adapt. Yesterday I got an offer to entertain at one of the best hate bars in town. 500 credits a week. We'll make it a team act. You and me.
Hate bars will be banned soon.
Not until Midge can give the public something better. And he doesn't know how.
I'll have to think about it.
I don't know how long I stood there after their voices died away. I remember moving about the stage numbly, looking at the cages, the still trapeze, the empty clown ring. I felt dead, all dead inside. In one of the cages, something moved. It was the Zorro. We import Zorros from Callisto, especially for the show. Imagine an ecology gone mad, a complete anarchy of flora against fauna with one murderously dominant species, and you have the Zorro. This one rattled the cage bars, staring at me.
How much longer?
Perhaps 6 hours. Eat your meat.
It is drugged. It will dull my reflexes so that you can kill me.
At least you'll have a chance. If you refuse to eat, you'll starve.
I hate you.
You hate everybody.
You, most of all. You planned this. Each night a Zorro dies.
I stared at the Zorro. Slowly, the thought took form. Before you die, how would you like one final kill? The Zorro raised its muzzle and stared, great yellow eyes expressionless. Then it grinned. I had to look away.
The human, the male, you hate him.
Yes.
You will remove the drugged meat?
Yes.
Done.
I remember that night. Lisa was so beautiful. She was fire and quicksilver. Her song was sunlight and carnival and April rain. I loved her so much I wanted to cry. I remember how we stood in the wings before that last scene and the way she squeezed my hand and whispered,
Midge, I'm going to divorce Paul.
I could not breathe.
I don't love him. Not really. I found out this afternoon what he really was. Quick, darling. There's your cue. Hurry.
Divorce him?
You're on. I'll tell you all about it later.
I stumbled on stage. I wanted to scream at Paul to warn him. I wanted to run to the Zorro's cage and bolt it tightly, but I am an actor and I had no real choice. Midge the clown, now singing, turning handsprings with the other clowns, juggling, dancing on the high wire. But the music was an ancient danse macabre, the song a leaden dirge. It had been so unnecessary. Lisa's infatuation for Paul was but a temporary thing. She loved me. She would always love me. Fool, and murderer now. Too late. For Paul and Lisa were standing in the center ring, singing their final duet, while the Zorro crouched in its cage. The cage door opened, and the Zorro roared. The clown scattered in mock panic. Lisa screamed. It was all part of the act. The Zorro was supposed to lumber from its cage in a drugged stupor. It would lunge feebly at Lisa, and I would slay it. But the Zorro moved fast, fast. Lisa screamed again as it came at her in the feral rush. I dropped to the center ring, moving to intercept its anticipated charge towards Paul. Then the sick agony as I understood. Too late. It was after Lisa. It was a nightmare in slow motion. Lisa trying to run, stumbling, falling. The Zorro caught her. She stopped screaming forever. The Zorro lifted its muzzle and grinned at me. I killed that Zorro with my bare hands. Through the grief and horror, I realized someone was singing. Singing the Vesti in a cracked, horrible voice as the curtain came down. My voice, the grand finale. Then the lights were on, blindingly. Paul was sobbing. The stagehands were carrying Lisa's body away. Someone was shaking me. It was Latham.
You've done it. Magnificent. What a trooper Lisa was. When the Zorro told me this afternoon, I couldn't believe it. What sacrifice.
The Zorro told you? I could not understand. He kept talking, and I did not understand.
It was the missing touch. Lisa's death at the end. The final tragedy. Sheer genius, Midge. Oh, look at those reaction banks.
The reaction indicators flashed a deep ruby, washing the stage in bloody light. Latham kept talking huskily.
The council just called. We've got a smash hit. Within a week, the hate bars will be condemned. The good fight is won, Midge. Meet Lisa, too. Fresh from the vats.
I looked at Lisa, too. I understood.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Paul whispered his hysterical laughter. Lisa, too, was lovely. She said with a shy smile,
I do hope we have a good rehearsal tomorrow. I won't be as good as Lisa won, but I'll certainly try.
Rehearsal? I said numbly. rehearsal for her death. Tomorrow night, the next night, all the nights, forever watching Lisa die. The show must go on. Short story by James Cossey, which appears in the book The Pseudo People, Androids in Science Fiction, a collection edited by William F. Nolan. This is Michael Hansen. Reading with me were Cliff Roberts, Carrie Frumpkin, and Dolores DeMoon. Technical operation for this program by Dan Schmidt.